Thanks for tuning in for the Book Club at 91.7 here on WVXU and WMUB. Good morning. I'm Mark Purcell. You'll probably recognize her voice from This American Life and her sly humor and many stories there. You may have seen her on The Late Show with David Letterman or The Daily Show with Jon Stewart or read her books, The Assassination Vacation or The Partly Cloudy Patriot. Well, now Sarah Vowell has a new book out about history. It's Lafayette in the Somewhat United States, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Sarah Vowell to the Book Club at 91.7. Good morning, Sarah.
Hello.
Where did your fascination with history come? I've always been interested. I love your stories. You tell great personal histories, if you may, but your fascination with our U.S. history, where did that come from?
I mean, it's not an upbeat story, but probably it came from originally being part Cherokee and learning about the Trail of Tears. I guess it comes from family history a little bit.
Well,
depressing family history.
Well, I had to ask because I'm the son of a historian, American colonial history historian, and it never clicked for me, but then one day something happened one day in a history class in college, and it just I understood history, but it took me until college to figure it out. That's why I was just curious where yours started with.
Oh, well, that gives me hope, because I one of my most clearest memories of American history class in high school was one of my fellow students jumping out the window and running away. So maybe he came back to it later on. You never know.
Well, your book, partly...
We were on the first floor, I should say. He was fine.
Well, I figured that when you said he ran away. So
yeah.
I figured he didn't break anything on the fall as he went down. Well, why Lafayette? Why did you decide Lafayette was somebody you wanted to look at? This French orphan who became a 19-year-old major general in our American Revolutionary Army.
Yeah. I mean, why? Maybe he's the only Frenchman who doesn't get on my nerves. I think I was attracted to the friendship aspects of his life story. I mean, he kind of comes to personify the American and French alliance in that war, and he was everyone's best friend. He, Washington kind of adopted him as his son. And because he was so young when he volunteered, he was 19, then when he comes back to America almost a half century later as an old man, he's the last living general of Washington's army when he comes back in 1824. And the whole country just went crazy for his arrival. 2/3 of the population of New York City is meeting his ship. It was this 13-month-long tour where every night was a party in his honor, and the whole country just kind of embraced him as one. And I was sort of attracted to that, how he kind of belonged to everyone, because there aren't really, I don't know if you've noticed, there aren't really that many things or people or places that Americans tend to agree on, So
right.
Originally, the thing that attracted to me was how much our forefathers loved him,
One of the few things they could agree upon, and you touch on that a lot. It's the divisiveness of the United States, that's the somewhat United States, as you say. And, in these fractious times today, they're kind of a reflection of what was happening back there during the Revolution.
That's right. It's because we are their descendants. I mean, that's sort of what I deserve, I guess, I wanted to write this book about this guy everybody agreed on. But then, once I got into the research and started writing about the war itself and Lafayette's adventures during the war, the Americans around him are pretty much engaged in various levels of bickering and infighting and backbiting pretty much the entire time. And then when he comes back in 1824, it happens to coincide with sort of the most rancorous presidential election in our history. So there's like everybody likes him, but they don't really, they can never really completely get along amongst themselves on the American side. But I mean, I do call it the somewhat United States. I mean, they were united enough to win that war and become a country, and you know, we have enjoyed peaceful transfers of power for, you know, most of our history. I mean, I came to kind of appreciate that quality in the American character while I was working on the book, because I certainly at least recognized it. I mean, like, I mean, for one thing, I was doing my research during the government shutdown of 2013. So I was trying to visit these battlefields where Lafayette had fought or been wounded even, or go to Independence Hall, and I couldn't because they were closed because the government had shut down. So there's something kind of, I guess, I don't know, poetic about not being able to celebrate the government invented at Independence Hall, because Independence Hall is closed because the government invented there was based upon an obsession with a separation of power. So that worked. But the reasons the Americans couldn't really stop bickering back then is the same reason we can't now. It's because we're allowed to. It's because we have that right. It's because we're a big country with a lot of different kinds of people. And, I mean, one reason I end my book talking about all the places in America named after Lafayette, there are so many, but my favorite, and I think the most meaningful, is Lafayette Park, Lafayette Square, across from the White House, because it's where people protest, you know, it's where we yell at our presidents, and not just us, people from other countries, when they're foreign, when their leaders are visiting, people from other countries come to Lafayette Park and protest their own leaders, because if they did that back home, they would be thrown in jail, you know. So I basically see this through line of argument and bickering and squabbling as essentially a good thing, and certainly not being able to fight with each other, like, that's worse, I think. And, you know, it is, we're somewhat united, and we're united enough thus far. I mean, there was that whole civil war there in the middle that we don't like to talk about, but, you know.
Sarah Vowell on the Book Club at 91.7, talking about her book, Lafayette in the Somewhat United States. You can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. And you do spend a lot of time in the book on Lafayette's return tour of America in 1824. And you point out that this was the first presidential election where one of the founding fathers wasn't available to take over the role.
That's right. James Monroe was leaving office, and James Monroe, who had been, you know, with Washington crossing the Delaware, he was sort of the last one. It was. I think that was part of why there was so much mass Lafayette mania that year, is because, you know, there was the first time the Americans would have to elect a non-founder, and at that point, you know, most of the revolutionary generation was dead. Jefferson and Adams would be dead within a couple of years. It was sort of this return for the Americans, like the last gasp to venerate the old guard. And yeah, people, I mean, it was new. I mean, how do you elect someone who, you know, wasn't friends with Jefferson? What do we do? I mean, we still have that problem, you know.
Like, true.
I wouldn't mind choosing between Jefferson and Adams now, you know. It has been kind of all downhill since then, I guess.
You talk about how Lafayette did go and see Jefferson in Monticello on that return journey, and what surviving founding fathers there were too.
That's right. I mean, like there was not a dry eye in the house when Lafayette embraced Jefferson. You know, I mean, they had been through a lot together, especially when Jefferson was a minister in Paris, you know, and when after the war and the founders were trying to set up a functioning country with a functional government and a functional economy, Lafayette was always coming to the rescue to help them out. I mean, my favorite one of those stories is how Lafayette got the whalers of Nantucket the contract to provide the whale oil to light the street lamps of Paris. And they were so beholden and grateful to him that the whole island, they pooled their milk cow's milk all together and made him this gigantic wheel of cheese and sent it to Paris, you know, to say thanks. So, I mean, he was a real friend to the Americans. I mean, it's one thing to, like, fight in the war and go home, but then to help Jefferson with all of these, you know, like, a little like these more boring kind of economic kindnesses. I think Jefferson says something like, I held the nail and he's the one who pounded it in. And so when Lafayette sees Jefferson, it is a very emotional reunion. Just like there's a very emotional moment when he goes to Mount Vernon and visits Washington's tomb and weeps. I mean, there was a lot of crying that year, I think. Just tears of sentiment, really.
Well, Lafayette was so well loved by all who knew him, as you make apparent in your book, Lafayette and the Somewhat United States. Did you come away with
a problem with him?
Who?
Cornwallis had a kind of a problem with him, but yeah, everyone else was on board.
Yeah, but he was British and he doesn't count.
What was your question?
Well, no, that's okay. I was going to ask you, so everybody was a friend of Lafayette after you did all this research and visited all these places. Did you come away as a friend of Lafayette?
I mean, this is so sappy, but I've never researched a book where I was always kind of tearing up, you know?
Really?
I mean, I do have an appreciation for him. I mean, I'm not one of those people who... I'm not a suck-up. So, I mean, I do point out some of his, I guess, less attractive qualities. And we should mention, I don't let him off the hook. When he came over here when he was 19, he was abandoning his teenage pregnant wife, you know. And so there's something kind of cavalier about that. and, I mean, like, he's like anyone. He has, like, a good side and bad sides, but they kind of... like, you know, Jefferson sort of complained in that Jeffersonian way of Lafayette's canine qualities. Like, he was a bit of a puppy dog. I mean, some of that came from him being an orphan, and he just had this kind of bottomless need for love and approval. And, you know, I think him being an orphan and then George Washington not having any biological children, Lafayette just kind of adopts him as a father, and Washington adopts Lafayette as a son, basically. So, but all of those kind of needy qualities in him, later on, when he was commanding his own division of the army, he could use his sort of brown noser qualities to try and, like, coax supplies out of all the, like, towns and or like the Congress to feed and clothe his men, you know. So he definitely was not perfect. And I mean, he's still, I don't want to like oversell his militaristic side, you know. I mean, he's still a soldier, and I have, you know, misgivings about war. So, I mean, yes, I have a soft spot for him, but he wasn't... I read a lot of books about him, and there's a way to write about him where you just kind of focus on him and his chivalry and sort of calling him a knight and stuff like that, and he definitely has those qualities, but I don't really... I don't like books like that, you know. We don't need to oversell his importance. He was very important, and he's very likable and lovable, but he wasn't, you know. I mean, the whole point of, like, the way I write about history is to try to rescue these marble figures and bring them down to earth. And I think it kind of in a weird way, like with Washington, especially in this book, it makes his accomplishments seem all the more impressive to think about his accomplishments as the accomplishments of a man who suffered, a man who failed, a man whose founding brothers failed him at times, and like to see the way they overcome their own personal failings to get things done. That's more my style.
Well, Sarah, thanks for the time, and thanks for sharing the book this morning.
Oh, my pleasure. And thanks for making me sound even younger than I already do.
Okay. Sarah Vowell, Lafayette and the Someone You...
Could I just request that your producer pitches up your voice to like an Alvin Chipmunk level while we're both talking, just so I won't feel so alone?
I'll see what he can do. He's given me the thumbs up here. So yeah,
great.
We'll see what we can do.
I appreciate it.
Sarah Vowell, the author of Lafayette and the Somewhat United States, her newest. You can learn more about it at our website, wpxu.org. This is the Book Club at 91.7. You've been listening to the Book Club at 91.7. Technical director for the show is Rick Andrus. Producers Kevin Reynolds, assistant producers Catherine Cunningham, web guru is Jim Nolan, and I'm Mark Purcell. It's Halloween next Saturday, so a few ghost stories are in order. I'll talk with Roberta Simpson Brown about her book Haunted Holidays, 12 Months of Kentucky Ghost. Austin Kleon of Steal Like an Artist fame returns to the Book Club at 91.7 with his latest, The Steal Like an Artist Journal. And a conversation with the new executive director of Cincinnati's Mercantile Library, John Faraday, all next Saturday on the Book Club at 91.7. Weekend Edition is next on WVXU. Have a fun Saturday.